I want to answer your first question, Mohammad Yaghoubi. It's my name, pronounced Mohammad Yaghoubi, he, him.
Mohammad Yaghoubi is an award-winning playwright, director, and theater instructor born and raised in Iran. He now lives in Toronto. Mohammad's works have been shown as teletheater productions, and they've been performed on stages across the globe, including in Europe, Iraq, the United States, here in Canada, and in his home country, Iran.
I went to watch one of his shows, and first I fell in love with his shows, then after that with himself.
That's Ida Kailita. She's a critically acclaimed actor, producer, and director. She also grew up in Iran. Her and Mohammad met when she was studying theater at the University of Tehran. Eventually, the two got married, and they now live together in Canada. This is their story. Not about how they fell in love, or about their experiences as immigrants here. This is a story about their lives as artists and citizens living in the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's also about a play, directed by Mohammad and starring Ida, called Heart of a Dog. The play is based on a Russian novel from the 1920s with the same name. And at the heart of both those stories, and my conversation with the two of them, is the struggle between power and freedom. But their story starts with the production that Ida mentioned, the one that led to her and Mohammad falling in love. It was a play called Winter of 88.
It's about my experience about the war. I wrote this play about missile attacks because I experienced that era, that time. And then after 8 years, I wrote this play. After eight years after the missile attacks, and I won awards for writing, directing, actors, two actors won awards. And Ida, because of, I think, this, let's say, news about a successful play, Ida, as a student, interested in watching this. And as she said, she liked the play. And it was, theater connected us to each other. Yeah.
In order to understand this story, it's important to know a few things about Iran. I'm by no means a history buff or an expert on geopolitical relations, but bear with me. Iran's official name in English is the Islamic Republic of Iran. And as the name suggests, its political system is an Islamic Republic. The framework functions as part presidential democracy, part theocracy. Iranian officials describe the country's political system as democracy operating within the framework of Islamic or Sharia law. That means, according to the constitution, the official religion of the country is the Shia sect of Islam. It also means that all laws and acts of the government must accord with the Islamic law. Iran has some of the strictest censorship laws in the world. With this system, the supreme leader is the head of state and the highest-ranking political and religious authority in the country. The supreme leader has either direct or indirect control over the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of the government, as well as the military and the media. The supreme leader also has the final say on areas concerning the economy, foreign policy, education, and national planning of population growth. We'll talk more about the supreme leader later on. Iran adopted its governing system in 1979, following what's known as the Islamic or Iranian Revolution. In short, the revolution resulted in the dethroning of Iran's pro-Western monarchy and replaced it with an anti-Western theocracy. But a combination of the upheaval caused by Iran's revolution and the withdrawal of the colonial power known as the United Kingdom from the region earlier in the decade reignited territorial disputes between Iran and neighbors Iraq. The Iran-Iraq War started in September 1990 and lasted nearly 8 years. But by 1982, the war settled down to a stalemate, with both sides having an entrenched front around and along Iraq's border. The two countries also engaged in sporadic air and missile attacks on each other's cities, as well as their military and oil installations. Living through that experience is what inspired Muhammad to write Winter of 88. Now, those were brief and very simplistic explanations of the Iran-Iraq War, the Islamic Revolution, and the role of the United Kingdom's colonization in the geopolitical relationships of countries in the area commonly referred to as the Middle East. Three very complicated subjects that need more unpacking than a few minutes. So, I encourage you to look for other sources where you can learn more, because it is really fascinating stuff. Now, back to Muhammad.
First of all, I should say, as you mentioned about boundaries in a totalitarian country, I was lucky enough when I wrote this play and staged this, it was just a short era in political history of Iran. After, I think, around close to two decades after the revolution in Iran, we had an election, and people believed this time their ballots would be counted. Everyone attended this election, and because of this movement, theater like cinema in Iran had a short opening, and my play was about Winter of 88 was about it was against the war. It was not a propaganda play. It was about people who didn't like war, who are scared and frightened. And that's why I think, because it was genuine, it was true about war. I think that's why audience would love that. That's why I say, when you want, all the time I say, your talent is not good enough. You should have luck. The proper time to do this.
The pair started a theater company called Enruza, which translates to These Days in English, and they produced several plays together. They also had many clashes with Iran's censorship bureau. We'll be hearing a lot more about the censorship bureau later on. After several clashes with the censorship board and increasing dissatisfaction with life under Iran's authoritarian government, Ida and Muhammad moved to Canada. Like Muhammad mentioned earlier about timing and being in the right place at the right time also helped Ida choose what role she wanted to play in Muhammad's next production.
We produced Heart of a Dog 3 times in Iran, once before our marriage, and Muhammad produced it. And I had another role, because definitely I cannot do the main role. It's a dog, and with lots of movement, with lots of, imagine it, the dog with the head a scarf, and I cannot move, and I cannot do anything, I cannot touch anyone. It's a little, definitely if Muhammad did that, it's not a good choice. And, when you're living in a country like Iran with lots of censorship, your brain works differently. You cannot have, even in your private moment, this in your head that you can do that.
You are wired, you are not allowed.
Before I came here, I came to Canada, in my mind, I couldn't think about that I can do this kind of role, because I grew up in Iran. And from the first moment that I remember, I had scarf on my head with lots of censorship, with lots of limitation from body movement and lots of things. I'm a woman. When we immigrated here, and Muhammad wanted to produce this, and he told me, Ida, do you want to do the role of the dog? And I said, Muhammad, do you think I can do that? He said, yeah, we're living here in free country. You can do that. And it's very shocking for me. And when I tried to do that, I said, oh my God, I have lots of abilities in my body, in my voice, that I never had a chance to present those. When I think about those moments that I live in Iran, I say, oh my God, how I acted. And no. After that, we rehearsed, and every day I found out something new about my body.
The politicization of women's bodies is one of the thorniest points of contention when it comes to Iranian politics, not just among Ida and Mohammed, but others who also advocate for more equal rights for Iranians. For example, in March, Iran came under global scrutiny for pepper spraying women who are trying to attend a soccer match. Women are forbidden from attending sporting events under most circumstances in Iran. I asked Ida and Mohammed if they could offer any other examples of the politicization of women's bodies.
They told Mohammed, no, she cannot do that. And Mohammed said, why? They say, because it's very sexy that we can see her knees. And he said, but she wears jeans. You cannot see her real knee. It's covered fabric. They said, yeah, but still.
Women have to wear hijab because any women in the public have to wear hijab. And I remember, because you wanted us some examples, I remember we had a play called Proof, and I had two actors who were women and wife, I mean husband and wife. And that's why I asked them to touch each other. I mean to
shake hand.
And ask the censorship office, because in Iran before publicly shown, censorship office should see the play and give you permission to be on a stage for the public. And I remember the censorship office, when they attend for seeing the show, our rehearsal, they said, you are not allowed. And I told them, because they are husband and wife, that's why I asked them to invited them to this show. And they said, but audience don't know they are husband and wife. That's ridiculous, you know what they say.
Iran's censorship office, the one that Mohammed keeps referring to, is called the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, also known as the Irshad. You'll hear the term censorship board or censorship office or censorship bureau used interchangeably with Irshad, but they all refer to the same thing. The Irshad came into existence following Iran's revolution in the 1970s. The Irshad's objective is to control all cultural activities in Iran, including the arts. Musicians, writers, artists, and media makers all require permits to publicly display their works. Journalists need a license before they can legally work in Iran. The Irshad is in charge of providing these permits, and its officers judge whether each producer's work aligns with Islamic culture. Censorship in Iran is strict and for the most part not clearly defined. That said, criticizing the supreme leader is strictly prohibited and carries severe consequences. Because the process of censorship involves negotiation and laws guiding censorship are often ambiguous, censorship regulation is a highly subjective practice and can depend on the interpretation of the individual officer. The Minister of Culture and Islamic Guidance, as well as a supreme leader, are the joint heads of the Irshad. Iran's penal code states that anyone who engages in any type of propaganda against the Islamic Republic of Iran or in support of opposition groups and associations shall be sentenced to 3 months to 1 year imprisonment. Mohammed and Ida had multiple run-ins with the censorship bureau, and they suffered the consequences when they didn't obey the laws. That's what led to them living in Canada. And after learning all this, I was left asking, why? Why were Mohammed and Ida so insistent on taking risks and pushing boundaries and doing things they know they're not supposed to when they know that they're going to get punished? And if that punishment ends up with them having to leave the country?
This is the part of theater I love, because you can disobey, but disobey has results. That's why we are now in Canada, because we disobeyed too much and they punished us, you know. In film, you don't have no way. If you want to show your work, you had to cut whatever they want. But I remember every time when they asked us to cut this and this and this in theater, we said, okay. And then we had two options, two policy all the time. First, do whatever they told us not to do, or change it to another way that is better mm-hmm. than this. They mm-hmm. asked, they told us not to do. And they say, okay, I changed it, but I did it the other radical way I had in my pocket, you know? And the audience loved that. I mean, disobedience. But censorship office, whenever they saw we try to resist, they revenged us with our next production. And that's why we are under the control work by work, you know? For me, it is celebrating theater, certain I'm a live person, I'm not a robot. This is art, and I can feel I'm alive by, let's say, showing rejection, showing resistance. I love this part of theater, and I think in Iran, theater is a political movement inherently, you know, because theater, even anywhere in the world, because it's a live art, you can change anytime. I mean, inherently, this art is political because of capable of change, capability of change. And I think we use this part of theater, and it was a best way for us to connect with audience.
We as artists, I think it's our responsibility to act based on our beliefs. And when, for example, they say, you have to do that, or you cannot do that, because I'm not just an actor, I'm a director as well. For example, when I wanted to direct a play, and they came and say, no, you cannot do that. I directed a play that there was a role in it that the girl was a prostitute. And they came and said, could you change the job to a nurse? What are you talking about? She's a prostitute. She became prostitute because of lots of problem. These are the things that I want to show. It's a social matter that I want to talk about it. Nurse, what are you talking about? Yeah, you know, because what we cannot show that there is no prostitution in Iran. It's, you know, they're stupid. We cannot obey them because we don't want to be like them. And I remember there was a play that Mohammed directed that, and I had a role in it. And I think it's the first time after revolution there was a role for women for a woman on a stage that lie on the bed. Before that, it never happened. And she was a funny, sexy woman, and it's new. And they came and said, no, Aida, you cannot lie down. And say, but they're on bed. What should I do on bed? No, you have to sit. And you know, the boy that he was my husband on the play, he lied down all the time, and I had to sit all the time because I'm a woman, and cover with the blanket. Even if I fully covered with hijab, with dress, but covered myself with the blanket and act. These are the things that sometimes I disobey. I knew that, for example, we had some guests that were important for us that, okay, yeah, it's near to the end of our show, and we disobey. And after that, they came and forbid our show for 7 days, 7 nights.
Sometimes in the meantime, they attend the show with the audience and see if we hear them, if we listen to their advice. I remember Aida had a show as a director, and the censorship office guy every night said something to Aida, and Aida said, why you are tell me every night something? He said, Aida, it's my job. Please let me say something to you because it's my job, you know? It's my way of surviving, money making. That's why it's ridiculous, yeah, but yeah.
I have a picture of their handwriting because they don't give you this, for example, you have to do that. I took a picture because I want to always, when, for example, I'm here and I say, oh, I miss Iran, I want to look at those things and remember, Ida, remember, don't say that I miss Iran. I had a picture of that at that. I'm one of my actors. She's very beautiful and she very sexy with a nice voice. She's very beautiful. She's a very sexy woman. And they came and he said, could you please tell her to cover her breast? And I say, she fully covered. And I say, yeah, but can she do that? I say, and she was very angry and she came, what should I do? This is my part of body. I'm a woman. You want me to cut it and put it at home and come here to do my job and come back? What should I do? You know, they're very, and I think most of them, most of people in Iran that do that, their job, even some of them, they're women as well. They're sick. It's not just their job because, you know, based on their belief, they choose this job to censorship. They cannot be healthy people, mindly.
When I first heard Ida and Muhammad talk about their experiences, I couldn't help but think about the relationship between power and control. The balance between those two ideas are two of the themes from Heart of a Dog. Without giving too much away, in the play, the dog, Shariq, is taken in by renowned professor and surgeon, Philip Filipovich. Shariq has no idea the reason for the professor's quote-unquote kindness is so that he can use Shariq as a test animal for a procedure to turn a dog into a human. After implanting human organs in Shariq, he slowly transitions into a human cartoonishly named Polygraph Polygrapovich Sherikov. As the play goes on, the person develops more and more into a being with human-like traits, and as Sherikov develops intellectually and grows to understand the world better, the professor and his assistant, Dr. Ivan Bormenthal, become increasingly dismissive of Sherikov. It made me think about the nature of power dynamics. The novel Heart of a Dog was written in 1925 by Mikhail Bulgakov. It's been described as a biting satire about the Soviet Union and the practice of eugenics. It was banned in Russia until 1987. But Muhammad loved Heart of a Dog, and as it turns out, power dynamics were also at the core of the reason Muhammad became interested in adapting the infamous novel into a play in the first place.
When I was under 30, I made my first draft of Heart of a Dog adaptation. I was not a playwright at that time. I loved this play, this novel, and I tried to learn writing play. And I started with one of the adapting this novel. I remember the Supreme Leader at that time had a lecture about anti-revolutionary literatures, and he specifically mentioned Heart of a Dog as an anti-revolutionary novel in Russia. And I, as a young, inherently dystopian person, I thought, oh, if I stage this play, it can be a hidden struggle with my supreme leader. You know, that's why I did that. And now I tell you, I started this and staged this, but I never told this anyone, just Ida, maybe. And it was like a hidden fighting. And when governmental TV asked me to direct a play, again, I proposed this play. This is good for TV. You know, you like that way to fight and you can say, no, I didn't know that. It was a novel. I like that. That's it. And when I, the last time I did this play, stage this play, we were not husband and wife. The second time, I changed my approach to about directing, and I asked men like women had scarves, and the propaganda, the governmental papers and TV showed my picture on TV. This guy wanted to
humiliate hijab.
Yes, to mock hijab. And then they revealed Supreme Leader's speech. Even the leader said this novel is not good. I remember my answer was, it's a good novel. I don't know what you're saying. You know, I think it's their fault. If they are a fan as a leader, they should know earlier than me about Supreme Leader's speech, but they didn't know that in the past. And I use this, ignorance of them about their leader's speech and stage the play. I want to say, in a totalitarian country, if everyone say even a little small movement, everyone based on their capability, we could change anything. In Iran, if a man wear hijab, it's for farce theaters. I mean, comedy, you know, the cheap comedy in Iran. And they said, if we wear hijab, it's like we want to project a farce comedy, a cheap comedy. But most actors, and one of them who is now the most celebrity actor in Iran now, not in the past, he liked my idea a lot. And the other, as I said, who was celebrity as well, he didn't like, and I could feel it's not his real, genuine, true answer, because it was like he was shy and he couldn't, it was like a humiliating thing to wear hijab, you know? When they said something like that, I remember Aida can help me. And the male, female actors said, now you can feel how difficult it is we have wear hijab, and you don't like to wear hijab for even for theater. When I told you I need rejection and different idea, I mean different thing that convince me. If you couldn't convince me, it means I should do that. I would do that. And they couldn't convince me not to do that. And after receiving permission for our first night, all actors, male and female, had hijab. And that specific actor, I remember, he had hijab like an artistic way. I mean, he didn't want to wear hijab like women. And it meant he tried to hear me, my director approach, but he didn't like it. That's why he not here like painters who wear a scarf. You know, even in Canada, I see some artists, some women has, it's just a style. But that actor tried to project this, but all other male actors did this. And we had just 8 nights with hijab. After 8 nights, as I told you, TV showed my picture, governmental paper wrote against me. We don't have artistic director for like Canada for theater venues. They are governmental persons. I remember the minister of the venue called me and said, Mohammed, did you see the TV about against you? Did you see the paper? What we should do now? And I told him, if hijab is good, I want my male actors has hijab like women, if hijab is good. And I remember he told me, Mohammed, don't say to me, you know what you do, and ask the male actor on cover. I remember this.
We are not against hijab, definitely. But we are against mandatory hijab, you know? Because, you know, women in Iran, if you ask 100 women, definitely 90 of them are against hijab, but they have to wear it.
Yeah. You
know? Okay. Yeah. Who wants to wear it? Wear it. But I don't like it. Why should I wear it? You know what I mean? it's they hate that people are different with them. They hate that because that this is the thing that Muhammad wanted to show on his production, that this kind of country wants to make people
similar to each other.
Yeah, look like the same.
Yeah.
Everyone have to wear the same clothes, the same hijab, the same, share everything. These are...
Yeah. And that's what the connection with, Heart of a Dog in Russian story and Iranian story. Because even in Russian in the past, after the revolution in Russia, communist revolution, they pushed, they forced people be like each other. And it's ridiculous because that country was against God and Iran is Islamic country, but they are the same in terms of policy with their citizenship. That's why I thought this story is great to show how two different political country can be the same, like China about their peoples. They force people to be like they want. And this is what you said about power dynamic. Talk about this even in, let's say, in family. When a mother and father give birth, if they own their child, no. It's because they create something, you are not the owner of them. It's about ownership and freedom. I should say, something special for this discussion of hijab. Hijab now in Iran, and even after the revolution, it was a way for control. It was an excuse for control. If now in Iran, the authority says no one needs to have hijab, they want to follow the China policy or Russia policy to control people. North Korea, yeah. But now they have they have a simple way to control hijab. It's good enough to see police on the street, Mm-hmm. Any country needs an excuse to be on the street. Police be on the street. They're in totalitarian country.
In the director's note for Heart of a Dog, Mohammed said Russia and Iran's attitudes towards freedom of expression and freedom of opinion are ridiculous. I asked him if he could explain what he meant and why he chose that word.
Because in Iran, you will be arrested if you don't believe in God. And two countries, Communist Party, they arrest people if you believe in God, which means they are contradictory, okay? Mm-hmm. But in terms of their policy, their behavior, their manners to their citizenship, they are similar, too much similar. And now, even now, realistically speaking, they are friend. The Putin and the Supreme Leader, they are close friend. We can see why they are similar, because it's bullshit what they believe. Their action, not their what they say, their action are the same about their citizens.
Because it's this kind of country, as Mohammed said, they treat their citizen the same. It's like that, and China as well. That it doesn't matter that, for example, in Iran, if you change your religious, they can hang you, they can kill you. Okay, it's stupid because they have no choice, because it's not that they believe, for example, in hijab really, or they believe in God really. It's the thing that they have power. These are that the things that they can control people and use everything. Misuse everything in country.
And that's why, Marcus, in China, there are Uyghur Muslims who are under the pressure of this, the authority in China. But Iranian authority don't say anything against China, who pressure, who torture Muslim Uyghurs. Even Iranian authority all the time talk, we are Muslim, we want to, for example, defend any Muslim in the world. But specifically about China's Muslim, they are silent.
It's conversations like this that make you realize how privileged you are in some ways to live in Canada. Given Canada's laws and culture and the fact that I grew up here, I can't even imagine being killed because of my religion. Not by the state, that is. It makes me think back to what Ida said earlier about people being brainwashed as a result of living under certain circumstances. Although you could say that the immediate "thank God that I live in Canada" reaction to tragedies that happen anywhere outside of our borders does feel like a mindless reflex at times. I wanted to know what it meant to Ida and Mohammed, not only as artists but as citizens, to be living in a country as free as Canada.
You know, when I was in Iran, I didn't know that I, as a human, has value. But now here, I feel that I have value. I'm a person with specific thoughts that only belongs to me, that and people and government respect it. I want to give you an example. I recently became an ACTRA full member. They sent me lots of things that I have to read and about my rule, about my rights, about some rules that about my rights as an actor when I'm on stage, when I'm on set, something like this. And I told Mohammed, I didn't know that I have this kind of rights as a human, let alone as an actor. I didn't know that I have some rights as a person to live in my life. It's just one time and I want to live my life. And I didn't know that I have this kind of rights as a human. You know, it's very sad, I know that, because it's when I think about my friends, my family, everyone in Iran, they don't know that they have this kind of rights. As I told you, that they brainwashed us at school, at everywhere. And we cannot think differently. But when we came here in the free country and we understand that we have value, we have, we can talk, we have a voice, it's very different.
The big difference is if you do something against authority in Iran, you will be in jail and you maybe the person can be killed. But here, for example, maybe you say something against authority, maybe you can be you cannot have opportunity to do in the future other works, I don't know, you will not be in jail. You know, they are not allowed, they legally they can't put you in jail. But in Iran, they can, not based on supreme leader's order. Even I think a person who is not that important, that much important, they can put you in jail.
I want to tell you something, that they can kill you if you say I'm gay.
But another thing here, thank you, Ida. We can't do Heart of a Dog in Iran with the non-binary actors as well.
Because they said that there is no,
they don't acknowledge them. Yeah, they don't acknowledge them. That's another part. I mean, when we do theater in Iran, let's say Heart of a Dog, all the time, part of our job is to get around censorship. But when we want to do Heart of a Dog here, we can get rid of this part of trying to get around and focus on artistic practice, you know, to connect mm-hmm. to the audience, to engage them, not to fighting to get around them. That takes too much energy, you know?
Aidan Mohammed's frequent clashes with the censorship bureau sound tiring. You can hear the weariness in Mohammed's voice. But still, he had to try.
After, I think, much more against the censorship office, I thought, oh, if they want to tell me to cut this phrase, this word, what if I ask actors to say 25 instead of anything they want, the censorship office wanted to tell me not to say? Actors told me why 25, and I didn't tell them the reason. And I asked them, just you say till 25. For example, in Iran in the past, you couldn't say, for example, bullshit, for example, or she's my girlfriend. Girlfriend, no one has girlfriend. Husband and wife, having girlfriend is not allowed. When the character asks, who is she? The other actors said, she's my 25. Anything you can imagine is that. And censorship office asked me again before the public show, Mohammed, in this specific time, they call you Mohammed, because in Iran, all the time, formally, they call each other with my family name. But here, because they wanted to convince me to tell me Mohammed, like a friendly way, what is 25? And I told them, it's just a number. If you want me, I can change it to 19 or whatever you want. But I knew why it isn't 25. Because I studied law, 25 referred to 25 code of institution law, who said censorship is forbidden. There is this specific code in our constitutional law, but they don't care about this, okay? And after two or three shows, and I used 25, this approach to get around censorship, I demystify this code. And after that demystification, I was not allowed to use 25.
As an artist, do you think that artists have a responsibility to kind of reflect society and to kind of challenge norms? And do you think that artists have a responsibility to do that? And for you, why is that personally important?
Yes,
for both of you?
It's actually our mandate, in our company's mandate, and my policy, my way of writing. I wrote from 2018, I started to write a play in English, just to practice, to think in English, because I live in this country and it doesn't make sense not to write in English. And my second play, my first play, it was just a try to write in English. But my second play is about my reflection about my society here in Canada.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I as a woman, I have lots of responsibility to do something as an artist, yeah, as a woman, and I directed a play. It was swim team. It was about four women, four Persian women, that they're not allowed to swim because women in Iran cannot swim, it's about that they want to swim but they don't, they cannot swim, and they made it. They make an imaginary pool in their apartment and try to swim. And it was about it. And as artists, as women, I think you cannot do, I heard a lot of my friends says in Iran that we are just artists, we are not political people, but we live in a country, I mean, they live in a country, and I lived in a country that it's whatever you do, it's political. Whatever you say is political. For example, even in taxi, for even in bus, when you talk to another person about for example, the price of something change, it's political. Mm-hmm. You cannot, you know, even small things. For example, you say, oh my God, it's the air is so polluted. It's political. Even yeah, this. Yeah,
that's good, Aida. In Canada, when they say whatever, what the like, weather like is like, it's just about weather, small talk. But in Iran, small talk is about politics.
You cannot say everything.